It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson. In the era of Me Too and sexual assault allegations, what should good sex education entail? We'll get some advice for parents and educators looking to navigate the waters of 21st century sex ed and find out why conversations about consent, boundaries, and body positivity are crucial. How do you talk to your kids about sex in the era of Me Too? 800-642-1234, ideas@WPR.org, or tweet us at WPR Mornings. My guest is Bonnie J. Roff, author of Beyond Birds and Bees, Bringing Home a New Message to Our Kids About Sex, Love, and Equality. She also penned the recent New York Times piece, The New Birds and Bees, Teaching Kids About Boundaries and Consent. Bonnie, welcome to the Morning Show.
Hi, John. Thanks so much for having me.
Well, there's a lot going on in the news today between coverage of sexual assault allegations involving Brett Kavanaugh, the Why I Didn't Report movement, and more. What do you think parents are thinking about when it comes to what they need to talk to their children about?
You know, that's a great question. I think for a long time, American parents have been aware of the fact that we need to equip our kids from an early age with honest, open, age-appropriate information about their bodies and other people's so that we can all stay healthy and safe and happy in our skins. But there's something that I think is becoming clearer now to American families and educators, and that's that sex education has world-class sex education, the very best, has a whole other side, which is social and emotional. So teaching kids about sex has so much more to do to do with relationships and emotions and decision making, those kinds of social skills, than just biology and medical terminology and the body. So we're working now on trying to figure out how to bring all that together. And luckily, there are some really good models out there for us to understand how to equip kids with those great. The great things they need to know about learning their own boundaries and learning to respect those of other people.
What are some of those good examples of how it should be done?
Well, for me personally, I had my opportunity to learn as a mom when I moved to the Netherlands with my family when my first child was still just pretty much just a toddler. She was just about 2 years old. We moved to the Netherlands and right away, as a new parent, as I'm looking around kind of trying to pick up clues about this whole thing about how do we raise kids, I started to see Dutch parents and teachers dealing really differently than I'd ever seen before in the United States with the teaching of basically what I realized later was human sexuality. That meant being really open with kids about terminology, very open as well about nudity. They had a really clear sense of a difference between nudity that was non-sexual every day, swimming in the wading pool or changing at home with, in the morning with your family, compared to erotic nudity, which is, not something for children. So I was starting to see these examples and eventually learned that there was a lot more going on that my kid wasn't old enough for yet, sex ed starting in kindergarten. And it wasn't just the old-fashioned kind of birds and bees talk. Sex ed in the Netherlands is also like the very best sex ed here in the United States. It's based on a model called comprehensive sexuality education, and it's K through 12. So time is spent every year in the classroom teaching children not only about bodies and human reproduction, but also, importantly, about knowing oneself, keeping your self-esteem strong, and also understanding relationship skills, how to make decisions with other people, how to have a more egalitarian mindset to break down. They're working with kindergartners and first graders on identifying and resisting gender stereotypes and inclusivity. So I was seeing all that happening and also realizing that I felt fantastic as an adult woman in my body, more so than I ever had before. And eventually I was able to learn that had to do with this brief, wonderful opportunity I had to live in one of the world's most gender-equal countries. So when I started to put the pieces together, I saw that what the Dutch were doing, those little everyday ways that they were teaching children to be comfortable and not embarrassed about their bodies and kind of rooting out shame from an early age, was giving them the confidence to have healthy sexuality, some of the world's best sexual health outcomes in the world, along with some of the highest gender equality in the world.
And sometimes we rely on schools and teachers to handle this topic for us. I mean, is that a mistake? Does this need to start with parents?
This is a great question, and I think that almost anywhere you ask in the world, everyone agrees that parents should and very often want to be the number one go-to resource for their kids about human sexuality. However, not all parents are up to the task. Not all of us even really feel like, you know, those of us who want to do a really great job aren't really sure how. We, we're wondering, are we missing something? Is there something new that I need to be teaching my kids that maybe I didn't learn from my parents? And so, yes, parents, I think, feel rightly most responsible for making sure their children are educated. However, even the World Health Organization says that sexual knowledge of one's own body is actually a human right. So in some countries, that's taken a lot more seriously. So there's a really really reliable safety net, really, in the schools, kind of a backup system. And what's really important about school sex ed that I learned, because I looked and looked at all different ways that young people can learn about sexuality, what's really important about sex ed in schools or churches or community centers, the formal sex ed that's offered to children together with their peer group, is that what happens is the community all gets the same information at the same time. So they can all trust in what they can expect rightfully from one another and build those social norms together. And, you know, I'm someone who cares a lot about this stuff, having come a long way, not knowing much about it at all when I was first becoming a parent. But I still feel like, you know, there's only so much I can do. I can't reach my children's peer collective as much as I would love to. That comes from us as adults in the culture. We need to make it more of a norm in homes and in schools.
Bonnie J. Ruff is the author of Beyond Birds and Bees, bringing home a new message to our kids about sex, love, and equality. We're talking about how to change the conversation when it comes to learning about our bodies and about sexuality in America. And let's talk more about body positivity. What does that mean in this context?
Yeah, body positivity. I think that it really, unfortunately, can happen from a very early age, that without meaning to, it's just an inadvertent thing, we can tend to send the messages, even to babies, that certain body parts are maybe less acceptable or less ordinary, less even less safe than other body parts, which, you know, that's a moral judgment. That's not something that kids are born sensing. But when we see kids with body shame, kids who are who can name their nose or their elbow, but can't quite, but maybe don't even know appropriate words for their genitals. They're getting the message that there's something about these other body parts to be embarrassed about, to feel shame about, to be afraid of, and it could actually be dangerous. And so what happens is they become less and less spoken of, and unfortunately, that's the kind of that mechanism that builds shame, and that shame, unfortunately, creates the silence that can be something that, let's say, perpetrators rely on to keep their victims silent. So,
well, and that's kind of the big challenge when we let fear motivate our talk of sex education, isn't it? And how does that play out?
That's exactly right. So that was something that really struck me when I was learning all of these great statistics about sexual health in the Netherlands and comparing them to ours. So Dutch and American teenagers do tend to have sex for the first time at about the same age, which is about between 17 and 18. But American teenagers actually have babies, unfortunately, at more than five times the rate of their Dutch peers. And those Dutch young people also catch fewer STIs and, in general, take fewer sexual risks. But I also learned that the Dutch teenagers are even more than twice as likely as their American peers to characterize their first time having sex as a positive experience that was fully wanted, in their control, well-timed, enjoyed. And that's when, as a parent, I went, Okay, I've been thinking about teaching my kids about the birds and the bees from a perspective of what I'm afraid of, what I don't want to have happen, but I want to change my mindset. This is about thinking in terms of hopes and dreams for my kids, like I do in every other area of their lives and their nurturing and development. So in my book, Beyond Birds and Bees, it's very much about what was it like for me to change that mindset, and what did I learn when I went out and looked at parents and educators who have already made that shift and how they're teaching body positivity and sex positivity in a way that helps every child to feel high self-esteem and confidence in their skin so that they know that they have the right to say no, to say yes, to say, you know, this isn't for me. Whatever it is, they know that they can own those decisions because their body is theirs.
Bonnie J. Rumpf stays with us, and she's the author of Beyond Birds and Bees, bringing home a new message to our kids about sex, love, and equality. Still to come, we have a conversation about consent and how we teach that. You can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. I'm John Munson. It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson. How do you talk to your kids about sex in the era of Me Too and Why I Didn't Report? That's what we're talking about this morning with Bonnie J. Rumpf, author of Beyond the Birds and Bees, bringing home a new message to our kids about sex, love, and equality. She also penned the recent New York Times piece, The New Birds and Bees, teaching kids about boundaries and consent. What do kids need to know most these days when it comes to consent and boundaries, and how do you teach those concepts? 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, ideas@WPR.org, or you can tweet us at WPR Mornings. Bonnie, let's talk about consent. Very few states require the teaching of consent as part of their sex ed curriculum. That was something that kind of surprised me. So how can parents discuss that with children of all ages?
Yeah, well, I think it starts with teaching kids to recognize what their own boundaries are. So that can happen with something like you can invite a child to roll up their sleeve and try tickling their own arm or scratching their own arm or a little bit of pinching, and ask them to identify what do they like, what do they not like. And then they can find out, you know, maybe from someone else in the room, in the family or a friend, when this happens in part of a comprehensive sexuality education curriculum for kindergartners or first graders, the teacher will have all the children in the room do the same exercise and then to compare. And what children start to discover is that everyone has different boundaries. This person might like a little bit more of a scratching, while someone else just wants a really light tickling on their arm. And so what children can start to understand is that what they like and what they want isn't always what someone else likes and what someone else wants. We teach them that they need to ask first before they lay hands on another person's body, and then they also have the right to expect that other people will do the same for them. And I think that we have some kind of old, traditional norms in American culture that feel a little tough to question. But, for example, you know, that required kiss for auntie or for grandpa, there's a lot of, you know, awareness now that telling a child your body is yours and you get to decide who touches it and get to be the boss of yourself in that way, and then telling them now you have to go give so-and-so a kiss hello or a hug goodbye, that goes right against that that teaching. And so we might notice in a child when they're uncomfortable in that situation and say, oh, I see, maybe you're not comfortable giving a hug. That's fine. Is there a verbal way you can say goodbye? You want to just wave or something like that? So honoring a child's boundaries when we see opportunities to help them discover what they are. And then just reminding them that, you know, whether they want to chase someone on the playground, whether they want to, play with someone's hair, that asking first is a great habit. And that And then the next level, too, is making sure that children understand that having someone say yes clearly or no clearly isn't always going to be the case, and that we can teach kids to watch for other cues, especially cues that mean no. If someone doesn't look happy, if they look like, they're uncomfortable, or if they're not saying no, but they're shaking their head, these are great lessons we can teach siblings, maybe around tickling, and we can also teach kids by modeling that ourselves as adults. Tickling is one of a lot of sex educators' favorite examples for how to teach consent, because as adults, we're engaging in something that's fun and feels good, but there are all kinds of different varieties on it. And so, kids might want to be tickled on the bottom of the foot, but not in the armpits. And asking and understanding if we're crossing boundaries while tickling, I know it might sound like it takes the fun out of it a little bit, but actually what it's instilling for the child is a sense of their right to have control over their bodies, so that they know that they don't have to be coerced and they don't have to be pestered into doing something that someone else doesn't want to. It's not right to have that, to be pressured.
Well, so much of this touching is culturally regulated, isn't it? I mean, and how do you tell a great grandma that she isn't owed a hug?
Isn't that hard? You know, as adults, sometimes I think what we do with our kids is often a response to what we think the adults around us might say if we do something different. And that's been a journey for me as a parent, is just feeling in the moment, who am I really here to protect? My own, social dynamic with, my great aunt, or my child's, own social development, who's, the 5-year-old in the room. And sometimes I think, I've seen myself do this and really have worked hard on just kind of taking a deep breath and focusing on, the vulnerable person in the room is the small learning child, and I'm an adult. I can handle explaining to the great aunt or whoever it is, later in the moment. But sometimes just a real kind of lighthearted, casual, looks like we're not in the mood for a hug, but, maybe the child doesn't want to touch at all, so high five isn't a good suggestion either. But, we as adults, I think, can finesse the moment a lot better than a child can when we put that pressure on them.
Bonnie J. Ruff is the author of Beyond Birds and Bees, bringing home a new message to our kids about sex, love, and equality. We're talking about teaching children about sexuality in the era of Me Too and Why I Didn't Report. When we're talking about teaching some of these kinds of things to very small children, is this something that they're really going to get later on? Maybe will they understand it right off the bat?
Well, there's building blocks, right? So the first thing we can teach very, very young children, even babies, is this gets back to that body positivity question. So, we learned from our daughter's preschool teachers in the Netherlands. She helped us straighten out our language so that we didn't talk about, when we were working on potty training, we didn't talk about a diaper anymore as stinky or dirty, but just, full or wet or dry. So she taught us to, actually several of the teachers taught us to use a more neutral language that didn't seem to have a kind of a value statement laid into it, especially not a negative value statement about body functions. So we can actually use those really early opportunities of diaper changes and toileting just to teach kids that their bodies are great, their bodies are supposed to be here, all the parts, and eventually, with that pride in themselves, we can teach them by repetition, because repetition is important in everything. I mean, just think how many times you've, probably told kids, to eat their vegetables or get a little more protein. So repetition is important, but what we want to teach about consent is that everybody has a right to their own boundaries. We ask first, and when someone says yes, we want to really see that they mean it.
Do we need to tailor our approach to this based on gender at all?
I think that is an awesome question, because I know some people want to know specifically, how do I talk to boys about consent, or how do I talk to girls about consent? And for me, I often just come back to the sense that we talk to them in the same way, at the same time, together, in the same room, and that goes for all of sexuality education, so that we help them to normalize each other's body experiences and psychological experiences of human sexuality, and to be a little bit more allied with one another, and knowing that everybody grows up in a human body, and our experiences of that might be different, but our experiences of that aren't unusual and don't have to be foreign to one another. So I think actually teaching kids, giving kids the same messages and teaching them the same expectations really sets them up to build more egalitarianism, which in fact is a protective factor against perpetration of sexual violence.
How do we model this to as adults? How do we model things like consent and body positivity to young people?
Yeah, oh my gosh, especially as parents and educators, we have so many opportunities every day. Certainly we can remind kids in their own play, but also in their play with us, right? I mean, probably there are a lot of listeners out there who have had a child either climbing on them or poking them and doing something that maybe we didn't want in the moment. And so knowing that we, too, don't have to allow another person, even a child, to touch us in a way that we're not into at the moment. You know what? Maybe I'm trying to concentrate. Maybe I'm on the telephone and it's driving me crazy to have someone tugging on my earrings. So I can make sure that I use my voice and say, no, thank you. I don't want that right now. Or please stop it. No. Mm-hmm. And to let them know, kids, we have to keep reminding them. So, we can model it with them. We can also model it with one another as adults. There are so many opportunities in daily life. I think one of the most important things that kids can do is to have healthcare providers who have a strong ideal about teaching consent. So a pediatrician who asks first before doing any kind of a physical examination on a child, who says, here's what's next, is that okay with you? I think that modeling from healthcare professionals is so important. And it even comes right down to dentists and
sure.
Anybody who works on a body can teach a child that they have the right to say yes and no by asking them first before they touch.
We have less than a minute left, but I'd like to have you leave us with a question that parents could ask their child tonight to start a conversation about this topic.
Oh, yeah. Well, I always like to invite stories by sometimes sharing something of my own. So I might have think of a time when, you know, I could tell my child, you know, once when I was a little kid and I was playing at a friend's house, we were roughhousing and I was getting pickled and I was saying stop because I didn't want that anymore. But my friend didn't stop. And I was wondering if anything like that ever happened to you, if you would know what to do or what to say. Or maybe just more simply, to ask a child, do you know what you like when you go to bed? Do you like to have your back tickled, or do you like to have your hair stroked? And just invite a child to name their preferences, because this isn't all about saying no. It's also about owning our wonderful bodies and learning to live in and enjoy them.
Bonnie, thanks for spending this time with us. It was very informative.
I really appreciate it.
Bonnie J. Ruff is the author of Beyond Birds and Bees, bringing home a new message to our kids about sex, love, and equality. Coming up, Beyond the Ballot looks at how we cope with the cost of prescription drugs in Wisconsin. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.